Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
gamble.
I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet, installment 5 in the free agency offseason preview series. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, a man who was not invited to go on Howard Stern and give a tell-all storyline for what it's been like working with me or playing for the Patriots over the last 20 some odd years, the one, the only Payne Insider.
I haven't listened to that yet. I gotta find it. I heard it was very good.
I listened to fits and spurts, and it just felt weird, honestly. And I say weird, Payne, because we've grown so accustomed to Tom Brady being buttoned up, always giving those politically correct and the right answers. So when he starts to come off the cuff and talk a little bit about his relationship with Giselle, how he felt about the Patriots, I don't want to say it felt forced, because maybe this is a more organic and authentic Tom Brady. It was just weird. So when you get a chance to get around to it, I'm very curious to hear, you know, what your thought process is on the whole thing.
He's older now. You just start saying whatever the heck you feel like. And it is Howard Stern.
Well,
it's a different platform, so I'm sure he kind of adjusted for that type of platform. But at this point, he's got nothing left to prove, and he doesn't have to bite his tongue for anybody.
No, but you wonder, too, if a guy, I mean, is approaching the twilight of his career, and whether we say Tom plays for another 2 years or he tries to continue to defy time, you also wonder if he's trying to change, I don't want to call it his off-field legacy, because clearly what he's accomplished on the field, you know, that's going to withstand the test of time. But if he tries to adapt his persona, and hey, maybe this is peeling back the curtain, this is more the real Tom Brady than what we've seen in the eye of the media over the last handful of years.
I think it is. He's kind of always been a character. He's all business, but he's had that personality, that snarkiness to him, and that's why a lot of the guys like him. And he's always been in tune with being relatable to other players. And you talk about some of his off-season regimen. You know, he hires guys to keep him in tune with, like, the most hip music, the most hip clothing styles, just so he can be on the same page as some of those younger guys. And everyone always seems to love him. So you know he's got a personality, and now it's just coming out a little bit.
So you're telling me that's what I need as I continue to get older, to make sure I'm listening to the right music, dressing the right way? I'm going to have to hire a lifestyle and fashion consultant to get it on the Bet the Board payroll?
It's possible. Well, I don't know about the Bet the Board payroll. I don't know if
I... Well, I was going to ask, can I write it off as a company expense? Because I don't want to tarnish your brand in the process.
Oh, no, I don't know if I want you spending my money. That's
all right. Well, we'll figure it out. We'll, you know, I'll have to skim off the top one way or another. We'll be able to make it work in some capacity. Bigger question, have you been able to get some fresh air? Have you gone for walks? Have you gone out in your balcony? I mean, what are you doing to try and stay sane over there? Because you sent me a text earlier this week. I was a little bit concerned. It was the first time during this entire quarantine that you said you were starting to go stir crazy. And for a guy who's lived his life in self-isolation, that doesn't leave me brimming with confidence for your mental state.
Yeah, I always like to play by the rules. So I haven't been leaving, going out on these elaborate walks, but I think next Monday I'm starting that process back up again, like going to get outside and start doing a little more exercise. But yeah, you know, had breakfast outside the other day, and you know, it's amazing just going out and getting a little fresh air, the impact it has on you just immediately, and you can feel it for the next like 24 to 48 hours if you're outside getting a little vitamin D and get some fresh air in your system, even if it's only for like 20 minutes, the impact it has the next couple days. So I got to start doing a better job of that. But yeah, just trying to kill some time. Played a little poker last night, which was interesting. Came out of retirement.
I was going to say, how long had the poker retirement been? I mean, I don't think a lot of our listeners know that poker was, you know, one of your true loves years ago before we even got this thing off the ground.
Early 20s, 60 to 80 hours a week, like really, really in it. And, you know, Haven't played, kind of got away from it because the mental grind was a little bit too much and there was an opportunity to transition to sports and it's a little more relaxing. But yeah, it's probably like the first time, I don't know, maybe the second or third time rather, that I've played for some decent money in the last couple years. That's it. But, you know, wasn't great competition.
When you were laying down 68-hour weeks, were you playing just online or were you playing live games as well, trying to find a balance between the two?
Online mostly, occasionally live. And, you know, my area had a lot of upper echelon players. I think most know Adam Levy, the Mizrahi brothers, and Chad Batista, who passed away like a couple years ago, but those were like, you know, the local players. You want to go to a local game, that's who you're playing against. So when you step down in competition, even if you've taken a couple years off, it went pretty well. So
yeah, hey, it's just like riding a bike, I have to imagine. 15 years out here in the desert, I'll openly admit I have never sat down in a live poker game at any of the casinos. One of those areas, for just the reasons you kind of outlined, didn't think I had the grind in me when I was working and crunching numbers for 60 to 80 hours a week as a financial analyst to try and layer that into sports and poker. I figured I'd have to get a little bit of sleep in there. But I tip my hat to you. The entrepreneurial sense runs deep in you, my friend, and glad to hear getting back on the horse was a profitable scenario.
You're turning down the friendly games. Like, you should just be going to, like, your buddy's games. I know you've declined. You just show up.
You know what?
You've become too big of a deal, you know? You piss away a couple bucks, make your friends feel better about themselves, and you hang out for an hour or two and have some fun for once in your life.
Let's pump the brakes on that. It's more the fact that I'm impatient above all else. Yeah. I mean, if I sit there and fold four or five hands, I go, all right, I need to start to do something here and don't exactly make the wisest decisions, even if it's for low stakes. So I just kind of remove myself from the situation. And to be honest, I mean, there aren't a ton of games that some of my buddies play out here. I mean, some of the finance guys used to play for low stakes, you know, 10, 12 years ago. And that was a little bit different. Go have a couple beers, sit and kind of do all that. But different lifetime ago, different responsibility, so to speak. And what, AFC East, you want to get through today? I mean, are you excited about the Dolphins as if we decide to go that particular direction?
Yeah, let's do the AFC East. Excited?
Right, AFC East it is.
I don't know if excitement's the word. Interesting is the word, I think.
When you look at the odds for the division, and we'll continue a similar trend that we've done through the first four installments of our free agency podcast, kind of go worst to first, not necessarily in the way that we project the field, but how the odds are currently set up at Foxbet. And the Miami Dolphins, the long shot to win the division at 9-1. They're followed by the New York Jets at plus 750. You look at the Buffalo Bills, they, of course, have been the biggest movers. Plus 150 right now, a price that's shrunk considerably from where they were when this offseason started. And New England, we've seen their odds come back. We saw them closer to that $1.50, $1.60 range. They are now +$1.05 as they figure out what life will look like after TB12. But we may as well start with the aforementioned Dolphins, Payne. They went out there and they spent $233 million so far in offseason contracts. Of course, the big signing, Byron Jones, brought into a five-year deal, pairing him alongside Xavien Howard, maybe giving the Dolphins one of the best quarterback tandems in the entire league. But it didn't stop there. Kyle Van Noy, Shaq Lawson, Alandon Roberts, Emmanuel Ogba, just to name a few on the defensive side. Were you happy with the direction the Dolphins have taken? Because clearly it's a much different tenor for a team now going out there to bring in assets than the one that was shedding all sorts of payroll throughout the course of Brian Flores' first season.
The direction is interesting, and I think it got accelerated a little bit based upon how they ended last season and the buy-in. All the players have bought in to Brian Flores, even in free agency. I know guys say the right things when they get signed there, but there were certain guys that were signed that had better offers elsewhere that chose to join the Dolphins. And so it's clear that he's built this culture, and it, you know, it's that balancing game. It pisses you off that you're not sitting there picking number one this year. But at the same time, when you're trying to build this culture, tanking necessarily isn't the best way to go about that. So the positive for the Dolphins is the players like and respect their head coach and have bought into this system. That's the real positive. I think the odd part, though, and maybe the part that I'm having a little trouble wrapping my head around, but less than the national narrative or the media. The whole goal, at least last year, or what Miami was saying, was this was a five-year rebuild plan, right? They were going to go about things the right way, building through the draft. They weren't going to make these huge splashes in free agency. So what they've done is a little inconsistent with their message, but I think it is important to look at some of these deals, and that's kind of why I took a step back from that initial thought once you look at these deals. Byron Jones is the longest term of this, you know, the slew of money that was handed out. His deal is more like 3 years for $54 million, and he's in his prime. You look at Kyle Van Noy, it's really 2 for $27 million, and he's in his prime. Shaq Lawson, 2 for $21 million. He's only 25. He's still ascending. He's coming off his best season as a pro. You look at Ogba, it's a one-year deal. Again, he's 26. He's coming off his best season. The Alandon Roberts thing is cheap. That's a cheap deal. It's like 1 for $1 million, basically, and he provides some depth at linebacker, some depth at fullback. He can play special teams, and he's a scheme and culture fit. Eric Flowers is the one that I know a lot of people kind of scoffed at a little bit. Again, if you look at the deal, it's 2 for $20 million, and he's 25 years old. And I think really what you should be assessing on the Eric Flowers deal is his ability to move to guard. And I think that probably pays some huge dividends. You know, it's clear that he's not a tackle, but he can fill in there if there's an emergency. The people bashing that deal are looking at it as like this was a first-round guy slated to play tackle. He's not that, but he is 25. He's moving back home to Miami. He's starting fresh. It's a new position. And if you look at the back half of last season and you look at his metrics, he was very good at guard. He was kind of a saving grace to that Redskins O-line, if you can believe that. The Jordan Howard deal, it's really one for like a hair under $5 million. And I think they obviously go out and try to get a more versatile back in the draft, whether it's Swift, who they interviewed, or Jonathan Taylor, who they've interviewed, or the unkept secret with their interest in J.K. Dobbins. He actually, if you pay attention to some of this, they moved up his meeting. So they flew him into town before the COVID-19 lockdown stuff. So there's going to be some bodies added to the running back position. Ted Karras, I think his name is Ted Karras. Whatever the hell his name is there. He filled in very well last year. And I know the Patriots wanted him back. They actually offered him a 2-year deal. Chose Miami in a 1-year deal. So the thing that seems to be pretty constant here is that a lot of guys like Brian Flores. And a lot of these deals, when you actually look at the fine print, don't really hinder you long term. So it's kind of been the best of both worlds. And a lot of the guys that they're picking up, there's not a lot of those guys in this year's draft. So they filled positions of need in free agency that they didn't think they could hit in the draft. So it'll be interesting to see. They have a lot of power in this draft. Three picks in the first round. It'll be interesting to see how they handle those.
Yeah, to say that some of these signings aren't going to be impactful right off the bat, but when you look at Miami and try and figure out how they're going to measure success in year two for Brian Flores, do you, in your heart of hearts, Payne, believe it's still more about establishing culture or trying to get some of those on-field results that the Dolphins, if they don't go, you know, say 8-8 or 9-7, which seems to be a leap of faith, not knowing what's going to unfold at the quarterback position, that they need to achieve those kind of results to feel like the momentum is still going forward? Or if they believe that, hey, look, we have the right guys, we're not as worried about on-field results as we are about some of the behind-the-scenes, making sure that we have that core that we can continue to build with going forward, that's going to set us up for not just a flash in the pan, but sustained success with a new regime.
I think a little bit of both, honestly. I think the culture is set there. He's got guys that he likes. Everyone has seemed to have bought in. And the way you ended last season, beating teams like the Patriots in games where they actually had to win them, shows great signs. Now you're adding to that. And I think with this division in flux, you probably see a team that could win another game or two. Let's see what they end up doing with the quarterback position. You know, that will be pretty telling. I think they're obviously going to draft a young quarterback. Which one is it? Who knows? There's some... I don't think everyone in the organization is quite on the same page. You have ownership who has gone out there and said, hey, do anything you can to get Joe Burrow. You have a GM in Chris Greer and a head coach in Brian Flores who probably don't want to leverage the entire farm to go get Joe Burrow. I think they are cognizant that they would have to overpay a little bit to get to one. And I think they might be okay overpaying just a little bit, but they're not going to give up a king's ransom for the number one. Tua is someone that they are certainly interested in. I think they are not in a position where they would completely want to move up to three to get him. I think they're okay sitting at five and taking him. There's a lot of smokescreen stuff going on with this draft. And I think now that it is going to be a draft that is internet-based, there's going to be a lot more smokescreens in this draft than there's ever been before. And so I find it funny that the minute the doctor said overwhelmingly positive on Tua, suddenly 2 hours later the Dolphins hate him and haven't liked him since the combine. I do believe that Dan Marino is really pushing for the kid from Oregon there. It's going to be interesting to see which way they go. They have a lot of juice right now, the Dolphins. And candidly speaking, you know, when you look at their draft, 14 picks in total, they're going to be doing some moving up. And I know you talk to a lot of the analytics guys, like, hey, you can't give up draft picks. You're only supposed to be moving in one direction, down or up. You know, you're only supposed to be moving down. Can't move up. It doesn't make much sense. When you look at a draft with 14 picks, you got to sign all those guys. And your goal is when you draft them that they're going to be contributors. And so they're all going to hit the open free agency market at the same time. Going to be impossible to sign them all. So the Dolphins are going to be moving up in this draft. And you have to evaluate some of the ranges in which you're at. You know, if you're sitting there and saying, hey, we're looking at our board, and come round five, we don't have a ton of guys with round five grades. Would it make sense to package some later round picks and get up and back into round four for a guy that we value as a late round three guy? So I don't think they keep all 14 picks. That's going to be pretty obvious here. They're going to be players in this draft, whether it's early on or in the middle rounds.
I mean, the biggest thing about all this is pretty wild, because you have to think, having that amount of draft capital, you're able to take a swing and a miss and try and reach for a player. Now, obviously, it's not a great long-term philosophy, and I'm not going to quite equate with Miami's thought process going into this draft like the Raiders last year. But if there's a guy you really love, and you know what? I got three first-round picks. Okay, the rest of the board may feel it's a second-round grade. You don't want to create a Rashad Penny situation like the Seattle Seahawks did, but you have to think Miami would be happier coming away from this draft, getting their guys, even if one or two of those players have to be overdrafted to make sure that they're wearing Dolphins colors.
Very possible, yeah. And who knows if that's in the early phases or in the middle rounds. You know, the ideal situation, hearing Chris Greer and Brian Flores, is that they would like to have their, in an ideal world, they have their first or second option and they're making all three picks in that first round. But let's see how it unfolds. Obviously, five really early picks in this draft.
Going to be very interesting, because we know what positions have some depth and may not be areas that Miami really needs to address, but I think you raising the point on running backs is extremely fascinating when you look at the guys rumored to be kind of the top three in DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, and the aforementioned J.K. Dobbins. So the Dolphins clearly be a team with a lot of intrigue 2 weeks from today on April 23rd, assuming the draft goes off without a hitch. When you look elsewhere in the division, the New York Jets, you have to turn.
You've been figuring out that Cox internet for a couple weeks. And
it hasn't worked well. Let me tell you. I mean, I tried to do a little bit of mock draft stuff with CBS, got through the morning session well, and then the afternoon was an mitigated disaster in terms of trying to get the internet working. So if we have anybody out there listening, and I don't love to take shots at companies for Cox Internet, that happens to be a fan of Bet the Board, you know, reach out. More than happy to try and strike up deals and negotiations to make sure that Skype and some of the other various streaming platforms are working accordingly. Because apparently in my area, Payne, has not been an ideal situation. Let's put it that way.
They got a monopoly going. Plus, I don't think they are, they didn't anticipate a growing area.
Hey, I mean, you're juiced into Xfinity, so get Xfinity out here in the desert, and we can make some deals, create some handshake agreements, and get that thing off without a hitch. As I've seen your upload and download speed, little to say, it far exceeds anything that I've been able to accomplish. But that's a different discussion for a different day. Hopefully the new home office, we're able to get that remedied. When you look at the Jets, this team is fascinating. Clearly, they didn't live up to some of those playoff dark horse expectations in year one with Adam Gase as their head coach, growing speculation that, you know, the Jets may want to go after a wide receiver compared to an offensive lineman if they stand pat at number 11. But again, this isn't a draft podcast, so when you look at what they've done so far this offseason, they went out there and at least tried on the surface to address their offensive line. We know Robbie Anderson bolts for Carolina. They bring in Breshad Perriman from Tampa Bay. But when you look at the Jets and the direction they're trending, Payne, they need to give Sam Darnold that support, whether it's with skill position talent or on the offensive line. I'm not quite sure they get a true passing grade with flying colors for what they did so far this offseason.
I don't mind what they've done, and I really think Joe Douglas is the right guy. I liked the hire at the time, and I think he's going to end up being a monster hire for the Jets. Very familiar with Joe Douglas. You know, he spent four seasons in Philadelphia, and I think was the driving force along with a lot of their analytics department to build that Super Bowl roster. The Jets obviously have like glaring need at offensive line. And I think it was, you know, pretty vital that, you know, you have a young quarterback that you want to support him and give him a fighting chance. So it's tough figuring out what Sam Darnold is when he doesn't have a complimentary ground game and, you know, he's on his ass all the time. If you look at the Jets at what they were up front last year, couldn't run the ball. 31st in adjusted line yards. And you look at like the offensive line and how they were, you know, the 30th in adjusted sack rate allowed. And you look at all the qualifying quarterbacks last year, Sam Darnold, second most pressured in the entire NFL, only behind Daniel Jones. Like 42% of his dropbacks, he was pressured. And you think about Adam Gase's offense, right? It's a lot of short passing. It's a lot of getting the ball out quickly. So those numbers are pretty astronomical when you think about that. So I think Joe Douglas did a pretty good job solidifying the offensive line, at least creating some depth. You go out and you get Connor McGovern, who had a ridiculous season in Denver last year, top five pass blocking center. You get Greg Van Rotten, coming off one of his best seasons. He's a veteran. They re-sign Alex Lewis. They bring in George Fant, who, you know, I'm not really sure what he is. They're not huge names, but I think those last two guys will battle for some depth spots, maybe from some starter spots. I would not be shocked, and I know you think maybe receiver. It's possible, but if one of those premier tackles is still sitting there at 11, which I think could possibly be the case, Joe Douglas is going to certainly consider that. And he's a guy that's shown over his time that he wants to build the roster from the lines out. And I think if you have the left tackle of your choice at 11, it's going to be tough to bypass that. Defensively, I still think they're looking for a pass rush. You know, they didn't get a lot of pressure last year. They were top five in blitz rate, bottom 10 in pressure rate. That's not a good combination. It's partly why the secondary struggled a little bit. They did sign, not a big shock, Pierre Desir there, kind of hinted at that. I would fully expect some draft assets to go into the secondary position as well. It may not look terrible on paper how they finished. I believe it was 18th in defensive pass efficiency. They played one of the six easiest schedules, though, of passing offenses. So, to me, the Jets haven't made that splash signing, but they got some nice veteran guys who are going to come in, work, and compete. They didn't blow their salary cap. They're going to do some things in the draft, but I think they've done a good job without spending a fortune in free agency.
I think it's interesting, too. I mean, you talk about the draft and what direction they could go, and that was originally my sentiment, that it was had to be one of the probably, what would we say, four good offensive linemen that are at least projected to be day one starters, from a Tristan Wirfs, Jedrick Willis, McKay Becton, and of course, Andrew Thomas coming out of Georgia. One of those guys, at least for me, would make a lot more sense than trying to chase some of the eye candy in a Henry Ruggs, CeeDee Lamb, or Jerry Jeudy. Of course, the Jets may have a different philosophy, but you mentioned that defensive backfield, and clearly there was a reason that the Jets more or less cleaned house on that side of the ball. When you try and figure out the Jets' offense a little bit too, Payne, safe to assume that Le'Veon Bell has to be better 1 year removed from taking that entire season off when he produced 3.2 yards per carry. Wasn't sure if that was more a reflection of where he was overall getting back into football speed or if it was the offensive line. But I don't think this Jets' offense from a skill position standpoint is as bad as they performed. Yes, Breshad Perriman, you know, Jamison Crowder, Quincy Enunwa isn't going to leave anybody brimming with confidence that there are true elite receivers there. But I don't think it's a bad group if they can protect Sam Darnold.
That's the key. You got to protect him. You got to give him a little bit of the ground game. In terms of Le'Veon Bell, I think it's a combination of everything. Takes an entire season off, running behind a porous O-line, and that's something we haven't seen him do in his career. He was running behind a fantastic O-line in Pittsburgh, and I'm going to tell you, his style isn't really conducive to success if you don't have a good offensive line. Right?
You mean waiting and dancing for holes to open up isn't good if you can't get an offensive line?
So, you know, that was always an interesting signing, and one that, you know, Adam Gase wasn't thrilled about initially. It's tough to spend on a running back if you can't really create holes for him. So that's really where they're at. Towards the end of the season, you start getting them ball in the pass game. But that's why it was vital to improve that offensive line. They did improve it a little bit. They got some depth guys. They got some veteran guys. I don't think they're done necessarily fixing that position, whether some help comes via the draft or some veteran guys thereafter. But, you know, I don't mind what they're doing. And I think, again, with Joe Douglas, the Jets are in good hands.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting team for a variety of reasons, because people probably arriving a year ahead of schedule on the Jets bandwagon last year with some of the flashy signings they made. Of course, the bottom fell out, but this team was significantly better with Sam Darnold, at least from an offensive standpoint when he was out there. Patriots game notwithstanding on Monday night where he saw some ghosts and whatnot. But this is a team I think a lot of people are discounting. We were. At least, Payne, we didn't have to watch the full four quarters there. Was able to watch two drives, flip the game off, and get on with prepping some college football that fine Monday night. But I think the Jets, interesting, when you look at their whole schedule and the games they project to be favorites in, not exactly a ton, but maybe a team that can fly under the radar. A team that won't fly under the radar, though, in the AFC East, that would be the Buffalo Bills. And a lot of people extremely excited about what they did this offseason, addressing some major holes on the offensive side. I know you have been loud and proud professing your love for Sean McDermott over the last couple of seasons, and Buffalo definitely exceeded expectations a year ago. I guess we should start with the big offseason addition, Payne, that of course being Stephon Diggs, who will now pair with John Brown and Cole Beasley in the receiving core. The Diggs, of course, an elite guy versus press coverage and man-to-man. Cost Buffalo a first, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. I guess the first question on Diggs, did they overpay for a guy that we're not quite sure what we may necessarily get week to week as far as his mental state of mind?
It was a lot to give up. It was a ton to give up. But it makes some sense, right? They think that they are extremely close. Tom Brady departs the division. And now you're looking at a team who believes internally that they're the best in this division. And to your point, you look at Stephon Diggs, and we've done a lot of work on him. He's a great route runner, and he is able to release pretty quickly. He can get caught up to speed pretty quickly. He's got long speed, too. He's got very good hands, and he can catch some contested balls. To me, when you look at his production, I think that's where they find the value, because you haven't seen like this elite number one production, but it's because he's got Thielen beside him and a defensive-minded coach. So their buy-in is that, you know, we think Diggs is potentially better production-wise than what he's shown so far. Now, I don't think he's going to see the volume that an elite receiver is going to see in Buffalo either, But, you know, you look at some of this deal, and certainly you give up draft assets to get him, but he's young. He's in his prime. And he's on the books for four more years at, like, no more than 11.4 a season. I don't think this move should shock anybody. You know, we discussed this last offseason, I think, pretty, like, in-depth that there was going to be this philosophical change in Buffalo with their receivers group, right? They went away from, like, the big targets with large catch radiuses because they thought they needed that for an inaccurate quarterback in Josh Allen. Instead, they said, hey, let's try something different, and they went to, like, the smaller, quicker guys who do very well creating separation. And they actually tried trading for Diggs last offseason, but the Vikings didn't bite. So now they got their guy. I think, you know, when you look at Diggs, the current pandemic probably doesn't help, right? It's important to have an offseason program when you're breaking in a number one receiver with his new quarterback. I think to your larger point there at the top, and it's something that you certainly are going to have to monitor, can Sean McDermott kind of get the emotional side of the game in check for Stephon Diggs? Because he's typically not the kind of personality that McDermott has built this team with. You know, I think, though, again, that, like, McDermott kind of understands that he had a playoff team last year and he's got a young quarterback that needs some help, and Tom Brady's gone. So there's a reason to be a little bit more aggressive. And McDermott's talked about looking for a deep threat for this offense and a space creator. And these are the types of guys that you go out and get. And the one thing that's pretty interesting is Diggs showed a different side of his game last year. And if you look at his average depth of target last season, it was 4.6 yards higher than his previous best season. But I think, you know, it's interesting. You know, if you look at Diggs, if he can keep the emotions in check, and that's a big if. You know, he can't be that guy that's, I think we've talked about this, right? He's throwing a temper tantrum for not getting the ball in a playoff game in which they led. So that's
not exactly ideal from a team leader, going, throw me the damn ball when you're running the ball at will to try and win a football game on the road against New Orleans.
Right. And that's going to be the interesting thing to, like, navigate and monitor, because it's important, I think, that you get Diggs the ball in certain areas. And I think when you look at some of these numbers with Diggs, like, improving as a deep catcher of the ball. And I think there is still this large group of people that have this idea that Josh Allen, because he can throw the ball a country mile, that he's a good deep passer, right? It's cool. You, like, see him before the draft, he's, like, on his knees and he can throw the ball out of the stadium. Like, cool. He's not very accurate on deep throws. And that's the one thing that could give you some pause here. If suddenly he's missing on these deep throws, what is Stephon Diggs' reaction? Because if you look right now, he is just wildly inaccurate on these deep throws. Of the quarterbacks that played in at least seven games, Josh Allen was 33rd in adjusted completion percentage on deep throws. He completed 18 of 72 attempts of 20 or more yards down the field last season. The one thing that he did improve on is the short to intermediate throws, specifically to his left side. And that's where Diggs typically lines up. So he's a great route runner. I think McDermott sees that and says, hey, let's improve a strength on the left side to those short and intermediate throws. Bottom line, though, I think Josh Allen needs to be better in 2020. And if I can identify this from my couch, that he's good on short to intermediate throws left, then most likely defenses are going to pick up on that too. So let's see. But I think if you are projecting, you know, Josh Allen to improve a little bit in 2020, having Stephon Diggs makes a lot of sense. And there's room for some real growth in this division.
Yeah, it should be interesting to watch Allen's continued development. You talk about the strong arm. Uncle Rico could throw the ball over the mountains too, but it didn't mean he exactly was an NFL starting quarterback. But we did see Allen take major steps, and I think you'll continue to see his athleticism help out that offense and provide that extra wrinkle as he became such a dangerous runner. When you look at Buffalo on the other side of the ball, a defense that's going to look significantly different. I guess we can start with the guys at left. We mentioned Shaq Lawson goes off to Miami. Jordan Phillips heads to Arizona. Phillips, interesting, though, because he had nothing but positives to say about his time in Buffalo, which I think is always fascinating with a player that leaves. Lorenzo Alexander retires, but in comes a bevy of fresh faces: Mario Addison at defensive end, AJ Klein at linebacker, Vernon Butler, Quinton Jefferson, Josh Norman, who I think you and I both believe may have a little bit left in the tank but shouldn't expect much from, and Tyler Matakevich. Were you happy with the moves Buffalo made, shuffling some of the parts on the defensive side?
Jordan Phillips is someone that I'm pretty familiar with. If you could get that guy to buy in and play every snap the same, he could be one of the better interior linemen in football. But the Dolphins couldn't get him to do it. Buffalo couldn't get him to do it. And that's, you know, why they didn't really sign him long term. And it's a team that needed some help on the interior of the defensive line. We talked about their struggles defending the run a little bit last year. Fresh faces to Buffalo, yes. But when you look at Josh Norman, you look at AJ Klein, you look at Mario Addison, you look at a Vernon Jones, all those guys, Sean McDermott has had previous relationships within Carolina. So their scheme fits. The relationships are strong. They're guys that can help the younger guys get acclimated and you know, continue the building of this culture. So those weren't shocks that they are stopgap type signings, veteran guys that know McDermott well and know the system well.
And when you look at guys that are going to be there, I mean, obviously you let a couple of your pass rushers go. Ed Oliver will have his second year there. We know some of his detractors on draft day. Do we think Buffalo loses anything that way, or with guys that are familiar and getting the ideal fits, that this team can pick up right where they left off? Because I know we talked about it at great lengths last year, Payne, with some of their efficiency numbers, that they weren't quite as good as some of the numbers suggested as far as their overall statistical ranks.
No, they weren't. They couldn't stop the run, and they had a huge down year in comparison to what they did the prior year. 2018, I believe, they were, you know, one of the most efficient defenses in all the league, and everyone thought that that was going to be the same thing last year. They took a step back. But have they, like, added a premier difference maker to this defense? No, probably not. But they have a lot of nice pieces, and it's always been about scheme, right, than it is the Jimmys and Joes for Sean McDermott's defense, and he's going to draft scheme guys, and he has had an ability. That's the one thing that McDermott's been so good at. You talk about that secondary that he built up pretty early on in his tenure in Buffalo, and it was finding scheme fit guys and getting the most out of them. Some guys that hadn't panned out other places, he was able to get the best out of them. And I think that's the one ability he has, and it's the reason I like him so much as a coach, is he can take an average player and make him better in his system. And I think that's what he's looking for with some of these additions. But there's no doubt about it, they're going to be looking for help on the defensive side of the ball in the draft, or some veteran guys that they can get cheaply after the draft that haven't been signed yet.
Interesting team. A lot of expectations now, obviously, on the shoulders of the Buffalo Bills, knowing that there's a changing of the guard. So we'll see if they can live up to those expectations and keep Bills Mafia happy. For that to happen and them to win the division, we need New England to take a step back. And we know clearly without Tom Brady, the offense will look significantly different than it has for quite some time. And I guess it begs the question, Payne, with everything going on in New England, can this be, for Bill Belichick, Matt Castle 2.0? Whether it's Jarrett Stidham, whether it's Brian Hoyer, or a player not on the roster to take over the reins at starting quarterback, because you look at what New England did this offseason to fortify this offense, and I guess the simple answer is not a whole heck of a lot.
No, not at all. And listen, they like Jarrett Stidham. I would fully expect that another quarterback does get added to this roster, though. And he's going to compete for the starting job. He's clearly the leader at this point. They've liked Stidham for a long while now. And what's really interesting about the path of Jarrett Stidham is he left Baylor after all the stuff that went on there with Briles. And, you know, they thought that this would be a positive thing for him going to Auburn and being in this, you know, offensive-minded system. And it really wasn't the type of offense that's best for his game. And so he dropped in the draft. But there were projections of him being a first-round type guy when he was at Baylor. And you know, I think if he knew Matt Rhule was going to be the guy there and it was going to pick up pretty quickly and he was going to have such success, he probably would have stuck and he probably would have ended up being a round one quarterback because of the system they run, which is more pro style. So they are confident in Jarrett Stidham, but they're certainly going to add another quarterback. Offensively, though, they really haven't done anything. They've retained some guys. You know, they tagged Joe Tooney. You know, they haven't cut Mohamed Sanu yet. They haven't cut Marcus Cannon yet. Those were guys that, if you were going to go full-blown rebuild, would have been some cap casualties, I would think. Defensively, though, like, you extended McCourty. You got rid of Harmon because you couldn't pay him. You got rid of Van Noy. Those are the big departures there. This team always likes operating in the draft, and I know that they haven't been overly successful picking the right guy, but they do have 12 picks in this draft. Maybe they spend some of that capital to move up into the second round, but they got 4 third-round picks, so it'll be interesting. They're going to have to hit on those picks. They're going to have to find some year one contributions out of those 4 picks. It's been a pretty quiet offseason, obviously, in terms of additions. The Tom Brady stuff was the stuff that made all the noise. I don't see how you can be better than you were last year. We kind of talked about this roster. It's really void of talent. Now, I know it's system-based, but I don't love a lot of stuff going on here. Let's just put it that way.
I mean, that's what I was going to ask, and I think... bringing up the Matt Cassel comparison, which you did to me over text yesterday, is fascinating. And you look at the skill position talent. I mean, the guys that led the Patriots, Sammy Morris and Kevin Faulk, largely split the responsibilities in the backfield. But Wes Welker and Randy Moss at wide receiver, a hell of a lot better options for Matt Cassel than what whoever the starting quarterback is going to have to deal with here. And when you look at the team defensively, we know how hot a start they got off to, but the reality of it was, as soon as they stepped up in competition, I mean, this was a team that couldn't win football games with Tom Brady a year ago, where the defense gave up more than 20 points. And now you're looking at the win total, the expectations here. I'm very curious to see if odds makers haven't reacted aggressively enough, and we don't know exactly what the true schedule will look like based from a week-to-week standpoint until that gets revealed. But clearly a team that's either going to be a grossly undervalued, which I don't really think is the case, or extremely overvalued when you look at their roster from the top man all the way down through the depths.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I've said I've done enough work to figure out what the Patriots are at this point. But there is just not a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball. And, the one departure here that isn't a free agent that I kind of wanted to hold until the AFC preview is their offensive line coach. Dante Scarnecchia is one of the best in the business, so I would think there's going to be natural regression there from the offensive line. I know they had some injuries on that side with that unit, but that is a massive loss. He is widely known as one of the best offensive line coaches, getting more out of the talent of the guys up front. And so figuring out how they're going to deal with his departure, I think, is a big one. But to your point, like, you don't even have a tight end on the roster that's worth a damn. That is like your security blanket for a young quarterback. So they're going to have to address that as well. You're hoping N'Keal Harry takes that next step. There was some flashes, but he's got to figure out still how to play the position. He's uber talented, got a lot of athleticism, but he's just not quite sure how to play the position. Mohamed Sanu is interesting. Let's see what they do with him. I know initially they didn't think his foot was going to need surgery. It did. I guess he's coming back. Let's kind of see how that situation progresses. And again, if they find themselves in a position where they say, hey, like, our team isn't quite there to compete, do we just shed ourselves of some big salaries or try to make some moves in this draft by trading a player? Marcus Cannon probably is a guy that has the potential to not be on this roster, come week one. But let's see. He's certainly good enough. He's certainly helpful. And you want a guy like that around with a young quarterback. But when you look at the financials, when you look at potentially where they're positioning themselves, doesn't make a lot of sense for him to be on the books. We'll see.
Hey, all Patriot fans can put their head on their pillow and sleep peacefully at night knowing that Demir Byrd could become one of your primary offensive weapons alongside Julian Edelman and N'Keal Harry. But interesting things in New England, the end of an era, and we will see exactly what this franchise can do without the face that led them to so much success, both regular season and postseason, with Tom Brady moving on. 4 more teams in the books in regards to the AFC East. Payne, do you have any creative ideas or ways that our loyal listeners can pass the time during their ongoing quarantine and work from home? I mean, you're the creative one here, so I wasn't sure if you thought outside the box and had any unique ideas you could share with everyone.
No, not at all. That's usually your thing. You're the schedule guy. Like, you plan out every minute of your day.
I'm trying. It's been a struggle so far. I mean, as a creature of habit and a guy who is big on routine, I've done my best, at least theoretically, to try and get through it. But I feel like time either moves faster or slower. I don't know the best way to kind of articulate it. These at-home workouts get to be a little bit overrated. You can only do so much cardio. You can read so much. I will admit here, amidst a lot of peer pressure, some of my guys are trying to get me to do a lot more college football research earlier, but I'm not quite sure I want to start doing that yet. I feel like I should keep pushing that off as long as I possibly can.
I mean, the cardio thing shouldn't be an issue. You're getting old and you have a girlfriend and you're in tight proximity. The cardio thing should not be a problem.
That's a different discussion for a different day.
In terms of, I think the key here is to keep some like semblance of a schedule. I like to, and what I've been doing is writing on a little sheet of paper before I go to bed each night, like two or three tasks that I haven't been able to do like in season. And then I try to accomplish those the next day. And, you know, you have that self-satisfaction of like crossing it off the list. And, you know, that coupled with potentially getting some fresh air, that's kind of how I'm surviving this a little bit. But I will tell you, you came through as not being the TV guy. Banshee has delivered so far.
Wait, you told me, I mean, you sent me a text after the first couple episodes that you were off the Banshee bandwagon. Has Banshee brought you back in?
Yeah, I got to like season two and season three. You're kind of at the point where it's like you're cognizant that there isn't going to be like a ton of twists and turns, and you take it for what it's worth. And
I don't know if that's a ringing endorsement.
It's action. It's a fun watch. It's a quick watch. It's not bad.
All right. Well, we'll take not bad. I mean, I didn't think we were going to get greater exceptional coming from you over there. So not bad is kind of akin to the way that we describe a lot of football teams, that they just have to be average. And we take that as a step in the right direction. So we'll give give it 1.5 thumbs up, I guess, from the pain scale of proficiency as it pertains to Banshee. But AFC East in the books, I think by my math and rudimentary at that, that makes 5 divisions we've covered completely. We'll be back next week with a preview of the NFC East for all you Cowboys, Eagles, Giants, and Redskins fans. But in the meantime, be sure to follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me there at Todd Firm. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod and go over to FoxBet. Check out a lot of their divisional odds that are available, win totals, yes, no's on all the teams to make the playoffs, and of course, a full selection of draft props, including trifectas and the exact scenarios that they believe could play out 2 weeks from today. Go out there, see if you can beat the market and try and put your money to work for you. For Payne Insider, I am Todd Furman. Everyone stay safe. Do your part at home to end this corona pandemic, and we'll have plenty of NFL draft discussion and more free agency previews on the horizon for you. And we'll see you at the window.